TNT Radio wants to know what you really think. From COVID-19, the Ukraine conflict, the persecution of Julian Assange, corrupt government, the WEF, digital IDs and digital currency, the Great Reset, the disassembling of the West, and the destruction of the world as we once knew it. Your opinion matters. It's time to get on our soapbox and tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Anything worth saying is worth talking about. Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's news talk radio, TNT.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Deprogram. I am your host today. Here in the States, it's Tuesday, December the 13th. And in that previous hour, when I was talking to Peter, yes, we do get a bit speculative here, but I can tell you from having done this, I started doing these types of shows in 2006. I'm going to try to tell you what I think. And like much of the news today, yes, it's partially opinion. But I base my opinions upon the things that I have seen in the past. And I think I'm right more often than I am wrong. And some people might call me a conspiracy theorist. I think I am a conspiracy analyst. And this is just part of looking at things over a long period of time and realizing, you know, there's some really horrible people out there. I don't think that most people are horrible, but there are some people that can do things far beyond anything that you can imagine being possible. And you know what? They don't even wink. It doesn't even think about that. For example, this guy, Sam Bankman-Fried, SBF. So yesterday, he finally gets arrested in the Bahamas. And I was wondering when or if ever, if that's going to happen, because the guy's super well-connected and they're acting all sketchy about it. But they finally arrest him yesterday. And so he is being held somewhere in the Bahamas. And I was glad to see that. And I even put a joke Twitter file about it saying Sam Bankman-Fried did not kill himself, because I do believe that that's probably, you know, I can't imagine that they're going to let this guy live knowing what he knows. But I was glad that was apprehended. Well, then shortly after, I find out, so today there was this hearing and he was supposed to appear at this hearing, but now he doesn't have to because he's in jail. And he was going to appear via video. He'd created some statements and he was going to talk. Well, now he doesn't have to do that. That makes me think, what were they afraid that he was going to stay? So in his stead, they have another person who is speaking, and I'm trying to find the man's name. It is John J. Ray III. So he's now the acting CEO of FTX, and he did the testimony. And the plan for this guy, what he was going to say, was that mostly what we already know, but the cryptocurrency exchange under Sam Bankman-Fried had what he calls unacceptable management practices. Yeah, I'll say that's a massive understatement. He goes on to say that FTX went on a spending binge from late 2021 through 2022, when approximately $5 billion was spent buying a myriad of businesses and investments, many of which may be worth only a fraction of what was paid for them. And they also made all these loans and payments to their own insiders in excess of $1 billion. And he goes on to blame all of this on the fact that the power was held by this small internal group and they were completely inexperienced. So SBF in jail, awaiting extradition, which is almost certainly going to happen. Meanwhile, wacky Maxine Waters, who's a Democrat here in California, who was going to oversee this committee, said that she was surprised at SBF's arrest and disappointed that Congress would not be able to hear from him. I wonder how much money he donated to her, because we know that second to George Soros, he was the biggest donor to the Democratic Party. So look, this guy might not be a killer, but he was certainly fine with taking money from people of all walks of life. And he doesn't seem to have a great deal of remorse for it. The prepared document or the prepared speech that he was going to make to this committee started out with the first couple of words was, I effed up. I'm not going to use the F word on air, but that's how this little creep was going to start his testimony. You know, it's just, to me, it's unconscionable. Some people just have a very strange psychopathy and they do not feel empathy for others, so they can do horrible things to you. I do not think they are in the majority of people that live on the planet, but unfortunately, they are some of the people that do run the planet. At TNT Radio, we never go home. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We got you covered here on TNT Radio.
Bringing you a world view.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Arizona. Arizona's Election Day follies and questionable circumstances have left many outraged across the nation. Carrie Lake, God bless her, is still fighting back with lawsuits, and there was a court hearing today. Here to discuss it is TNT News producer John Matlin.
Hey, so yeah, Carrie Lake is still waging war on what seems like endless corruption in the elections that took place in Arizona last month. Today, Judge Peter Thompson ordered Carrie Lake and the defendants of Katie Hobbs, Maricopa County Board of Supervisors and election directors to appear in digital court. Katie Hobbs wasn't visible on the stream call, but was instead represented by officials and legal representatives acting in her full capacity, keeping the streak alive of not appearing near Carrie Lake. The case was held on Microsoft Teams, and somehow the link for the actual hearing was widely distributed, creating havoc for the judge. Hundreds of people packed into the official digital courtroom, causing delays. The stream was not working at one point, and even Carrie Lake was locked out. And at one point, she had to go on and tweet, quote, "I was just told this is the most popular meeting in America right now. I can't even get into the court hearing meeting, nor can my attorneys. MS Teams meeting notification window says, meeting lobby is full right now. Please try again in a few minutes." So today's meeting was to lay down the schedule going forward. The judge seemed to suggest he fully believes the Hobbs team and all parties on their side of the table will move to dismiss the case. The judge fully laid out all timelines for legal responses and arguments if it indeed goes forward. The Hobbs side and election board will present oral arguments as one, originally requesting an hour for everyone to present, to which that was shot down as Carrie Lake's team needs a lot more than that. So Team Lake mentioned wanting a 3-day trial, but it appears to have landed on a 2-day trial with time split evenly among the sides, as timing is paramount with a January 2nd swear-in date set for Hobbs, and of course, with that, the transfer of power. The lawsuit is looking to nullify and overturn the election results with perhaps another election taking place. So, Michael, are you ready for some fireworks? Because I feel like this one's going to be a fun one to watch. And of course, that is barring the judge doesn't just shut it down.
Well, I was not aware that this was happening today until you sent me the notes for this. And Carrie Lake, she is now in cult hero status. I mean, they have a folk hero. And so regardless of what happens with this, she is now one of the most recognizable political names in the U.S. I think that's a good thing. I don't know what to expect out of this. I'm guessing that it will get shut down. But she's got a bright future if she chooses to pursue this. Who knows? She might just decide, you know what, I've got a media background. Maybe I just become a political analyst now. But I like her. I like her spunk. Thank God for her having the guts to stick with this so that we can even have these conversations.
Yeah, I foresee an avenue for her being Trump's running mate. I really do. So she definitely has a future ahead of her. But when you look at what we watched go on in Maricopa and the Arizona elections, to the fact that they're going to be able to get this into court and it's going to have to be discussed is a big win in itself. And I mean, that, yes, of course, is if the judge doesn't just say, okay, the move for dismiss is granted, because they could just go right to dismissal. But we're talking about different dark money packs that were put together by Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richter. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of ballots that did not have any chain of custody documentation. we're watching some really, really awful stuff very similar to 2020 that just kept getting shot down. But if Arizona, you know, we're looking at Maricopa County that saw such vast problems across the entire districts of Maricopa County. We're talking about people not being able to vote, machines being down, and the chain of command goes up to Katie Hobbs, who's Secretary of State, overseeing the election she's running in. I mean, this can't get any more, how should I say this? Dumber.
Absurd.
It can't get any more dumber. Absurd. Yeah, this is peak level. And I can't wait to hear what they have come out in court and how it is going to be argued. And the fact that they're doing it on the correct timeline does leave an avenue, I would assume, in with legal standing, that they could, in fact, have another election and overturn this.
I would love to see that happen. And like yourself, I'm glad that this is being called out. And, you know, to Carrie Lake's credit, she drew up a lawsuit, which was dismissed a while back, but basically saying, hey, listen, let's get these machines out of here because I anticipate issues. And then guess what? The day the election rolls around, what happens? Right off the bat, their tabulation machines in several places are not functioning. I mean, it's like a sitcom. Anyone could have predicted this, and that's exactly what happened. So now, will they be able to get away with it yet again? I think it is possible, unfortunately, but I hope I'm wrong.
It's definitely possible. But again, she brought a lawsuit up. I believe it was in June. Carrie Lake brought a lawsuit forward about the tabulators, saying that there'd be an issue, and it was dismissed. And that's what we keep hearing. The people that are fighting for election integrity or have questions about it, everything gets dismissed. And if you can't discuss it and have evidence presented in a court where it becomes real and less alleged, then you can't ever get past the problems that we're seeing. And now we're going to have these things addressed in court, hopefully. And I think it's well aware of how many people are watching as the courtroom crashed, and you have people, you know, all over the country tuning in. I'm here in New York City, and I'm tuning into this mm-hmm. Arizona court case hearing. And it's just a meeting about laying out a timeline and seeing what would be said. But you're outside of hundreds of thousands of ballots that didn't have the correct chain of custody. You have things like 25,000 ballots were also reported to be added to Maricopa County's totals after Election Day. Not really any explanation as to how. You're talking about failed Republican, the machines failed in the Republican voters at over 59% of the polling locations. Hours and hours of waiting to disenfranchise all of the Republican voters that were out there. The belief is Republican voters turned out at least 3-1 ratio on Election Day in Maricopa County. You keep going, and there's so many things. Well, then you got to prove it. That's the point of the court. You know, you could read stuff in the media. You can never know. We were talking about how the news could be fake news, skewed news, opinion news. I too also used the hashtag Sam Bankman-Fried didn't kill himself today. I was sadly the second person on Twitter. If you look up the hashtag, I claim to be the first, but I have to take the second, at least for the hashtag use. I even put together a picture of him with the dates that the years that he was alive. So, I mean, that was parody news. That was parody news. But again, I talked about this, and I'm just going to throw this out there because you were talking about it right before we got in, and I know this deviates from the Lake Hobbs saga that might be going to court. But when you look at who got that indictment and who got him arrested, and now he was not able to testify the day before he was supposed to in front of the U.S. House Financial Committee, the Southern District of New York. Go look at the statement that was put out for Jeffrey Epstein from the Southern District of New York. That's where they send people to silence them one way or another.
John, that's the way I see it. And I was excited yesterday when he got arrested. But then shortly after, when I realized he was supposed to testify today, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. One last thing on Carrie Lake, though, because you'd mentioned how all of these cases always do seem to get dismissed, and certainly that was the case with all of the cases that Trump's team was trying to bring about 2020. But the law of averages, it's like a winning or losing team who just wins, or loses. Eventually, it cuts the other way. Eventually, the law of averages says that one of these is going to get one And God bless Carrie Lake and Mark Fincham. Maybe it'll be one of theirs.
Yeah. And to think about the pressure on the judge. So Judge Peter Thompson watched his digital courtroom get overran from people. Now he knows his eyes across the nation. And people are watching the evidence. People are pissed off. I mean, for lack of better words. So it can't just be business as usual. If you're going to bury this case, one would think you have to do it with a good argument to do so. But to just dismiss it, I think that outcry would be very loud. And, you know, he knows that there's a tension on here. You can't just dismiss it because you don't want to be a part of it. So we're in some strange times. And again, they didn't try to take a route that would be less criminal. She, and by she, I mean, Katie Hobbs stayed in charge of the election, didn't recuse herself. Former state secretaries of Arizona said she should have. You know, we're just watching this. And I really hope to get to hear all the evidence and see it presented.
The great John Lennon once said, "Strange days indeed. My mighty peculiar mama," something to that effect. I'm a John Lennon freak. But anyway, John Matlin, thank you, brother. We will probably be talking about this again tomorrow. Always good stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Brit Hamacek will be joining us for the remainder of this hour, and this will be his first time on the show.
You should hear what Brian McLean is talking about.
A rally to bring awareness to current activism that encourages children to question their gender identity and sexual orientation went forward peacefully despite reports of Antifa threats to, quote unquote, bring rage. Oh, you're going to bring some rage, are you, Antifa? The group brought their message of standing against sexualizing children, alienating them from their parents, and helping them pursue gender transition treatments. Local chapters of Fathers for Freedom, Moms for Liberty, and Gays Against Groomers organized the three-hour event. They build it as one that brings about peace and unity, empowering others, and informing parents and citizens. Rally organizers said that even though they appreciate the national publicity to bring about awareness, it may have deterred others from attending due to divisive and threatening comments on social media. Well, yeah, of course. That's what happens when Proud Boys and Antifa get involved in this. There's no need for any of that.
Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Who is this?
Who are you?
Who are you? Tell us.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, you legends. We have got a brand new guest on the show. He making his first appearance today is Brit Hamacek. He's the executive director for humanevents.com. He also serves as the director of policy research for Jeff Webb's Middle Class Warriors. You may have seen him on media appearances in the past. He's all over the place. He has his own site called BritHamacek.com. And he was one of the people who played a role in the early development of Turning Point USA. And he's also co-authored Charlie Kirk's first book, Time for a Turning Point. Brit, welcome to Deed Program.
It's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited about it. And by the way, I'll just add, not because I'm big on my own accolades, but my most recent book is the one I wrote with the late Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, passed away in June. And that book is out now. Called Zelenko, How to Decapitate the Serpent. Zev loves serpents and snakes. And so that's available on Amazon for people.
Say the title of the, I do not have that in my notes for some reason. Say the title of the book again.
The title of the book is Zelenko, How to Decapitate the Serpent. And of course, Zev, a big medical freedom guy, and started his own foundation before he passed. And all the proceeds from the book go directly to his foundation to continue his work.
Well, Dr. Zelenko, he was a great man. He is much missed. And we here at TNT are also very big on medical freedom. And that's one of the cornerstone topics that we have here. We talk about the COVID situation and all that has wrought in its path as a result, and we are opposed to much of it. And Dr. Zelenko, you know, I used the Zelenko protocol when I had COVID. And one quick aside, man, it seems like COVID is sneaking back up on some members of my family who are getting over it again. Not my immediate family, thank heavens. But so be safe, you guys out there, and look into the Zelenko protocol. Brent, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today, I was reading one of your articles, and you had an article that came out towards the end of November, and it was called Understanding and Embracing the Role of the 21st Century American Dissident. Mm-hmm. That hit home right off the bat. And you talk about the fact that people were blowing up your phone after the midterm, saying how they couldn't believe that the election went the way that it did because they thought there was going to be the red tsunami. And I admitted to you in one of my emails, I was with you. I didn't think there was going to be a red tsunami. And I'll tell you why I didn't think it was going to. I just didn't have any trust in the electoral system, the integrity of the elections. I'm still concerned about that. But tell me what you were thinking.
So thanks so much for this is my favorite topic. And it's great to be on your show and be able to share it with your audience. So understanding and embracing the role of a 21st century American dissident. You're right. It was just republished with an update at humanevents.com. People can go and read it, and I'd love it if they did. And I'd love it if they shared their thoughts afterwards. But it's a reprint because I originally wrote it in January of 2021. And I wrote it right after January 6th. And the reason I sat down and wrote it is because it became very clear to me before January 6th became what it's become, I could see what it was going to do, because what it did is it gave images to an argument that was being made that people who believed in individual liberty and the Constitution and free markets and all sorts of other archaic notions were now people that needed to be feared, needed to be suppressed. And they were of concern to folks. And we've been being suppressed for a while. We've been watching our freedoms in the United States and individual liberty from an individual liberty perspective be slowly extinguished over more than 100 years. But given the images of January 6th, what that was is like the old William Randolph Hearst line of, you give me pictures, I'll give you a war. And those pictures from that day at the Capitol allowed the collectivist forces in this country to convince regular average folks that, well, people like me, people like you were a threat and we need to be dealt with severely. And so what I pointed out was the fact that we might still have the same rights on paper as other Americans have, but we don't have them in effect, and we can't expect to have them in effect for a while. And what we were going to need to do to combat that was to embrace the attitude and the tactics that we saw deployed so effectively and patiently and persistently in Eastern Europe over the last half of the last century. We had to act like dissidents. Our role models couldn't be Washington and Jefferson. Our role models had to be Solzhenitsyn and Valesa and Sakharov and people like that. So that was the gist of the article, and it came to me quickly. I sat and wrote all 7,000 plus words of it at my computer in an afternoon in my kitchen, and it attracted worldwide attention, including in Australia, where it was used by some group as a Readers of the Week club selection that they had. They wrote and asked me permission.
Well, it is a great piece of work, and the minute I started reading this, it resonated with me because I love America. I love the things that we were founded on. And as a youth, you know, I wasn't always, you know, I believed some of the things that I would see that I've now stood corrected on. And in our youth, sometimes we get pretty liberal with our ideas. And over time, you learn to appreciate those things that do actually work and the good foundations that the country was built upon. And now I worry for the future of the country. And so when I see the term American dissident, it does resonate with me. You guys, we're going to take our quick news, bottom of the hour news break, and then we will come back for the remainder of the hour with Brent Hamacek.
TNT Radio News.
I've got news for you, baby. I've got news for you, baby.
News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. A former Libyan intelligence official accused of making the bomb that brought down Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, appeared Monday in a federal court charged with an act of international terrorism. The former CEO of failed cryptocurrency firm FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, has been arrested in the Bahamas at the request of the U.S. government. Serious gas shortages across the EU are now expected next year as well, according to Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
Merry Christmas to all!
Merry Christmas!
We're unwrapping the big stories this Christmas.
Wishing you a Merry Christmas.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Brent Habachek is my guest. He's the executive editor for humanevents.com, which is where I came across this article that we're discussing. And Brent, in your kind of prelude or intro into this being reprinted, I'm just going to read two short paragraphs because...
Sure.
This is... It hit me pretty hard. The reason the last 2 years of national misery under a fascist model of socialism didn't create some overwhelming backlash at the polls is so obvious it is easy to miss. The last 2 years didn't create a backlash because they are natural consequences, natural consequence of over 100 plus years of choices. The nation brought itself voluntarily to this point. Why would it all of a sudden decide to start over?
That's right. I mean, that's the reason why I had said there wouldn't be a red wave. We all know about the election integrity issues and debates that are going on in the United States. And I don't discount any of those at all for a moment. But there's a different problem. I like to call it the Mitch McConnell problem. So Mitch McConnell's been reelected every year in Kentucky going back to 1984. Last time he ran, he won with something like 58% of the vote. Now, there are folks that will say, and I know they're out there, and they'll say, well, Mitch McConnell fixed that election. My contention is, no, he didn't. And let's say he fixed it a bit. He didn't fix it by 8 points. And so that means that the people of Kentucky, a fairly moderate state in the middle of the country, every year for decades have stepped up and voted to reelect a man who's, in my mind, sort of the personification of collectivism and evil in this country. He wears a false face, says he's a conservative. He's not. He's just an aristocratic deal cutter. And he likes to maintain power over people. We look at Gretchen Whitmer, who is governor of Michigan, who won her election 54% to something. You say, well, people say, well, she cheated in Michigan. Maybe she did. I don't believe for a minute she flipped that many percentage points of a vote. So the people in the state of Michigan who were under suppression for those 2 years, she was one of the harshest governors during the pandemic, went back to the poll. Let's say for fun, just for fun, let's say she cheated enough to win. And let's say that only 49% of the people voted for her. Well, that means that almost half the people in the state of Michigan voted for somebody who operates under a fascist socialist model. So our problem here in the United States isn't about close calls in elections or a little bit of tampering or midterm disappointing results. It's the fact that we've been traveling on a trajectory for well over 100 years with a series of identifiable events that you can point to that have moved us along on the path to collectivism. So in these last couple of years, we've seen collectivism in sort of full force, and everybody thought, oh, well, Americans are going to reject that at the polls. Why? They've asked for it for well over 100 years. And you don't stop inertia in some silly 2022 midterm. It doesn't work that way. You don't reverse human course that fast.
I could not agree more. And while I did have concerns about electoral integrity, I also was aware of this general idea, this malaise that we have allowed ourselves to get into. And I was listening to an analyst a day or two ago, and he was bringing up a point that always I picture in my mind. It's like when we look at a third world country or a downtrodden country that's rising up against its leadership or the abuses of a large corporation or something, well, these are people whose backs are against the wall and they don't have a great deal of personal autonomy in their life. And they are out there and they are doing what you would think that we would do, that we would rise up against this and we would get in the streets. Well, here in the West, we do not do that, especially in the U.S., because we have this vision that we have X amount of freedom and we're pretty comfortable. So for us to actually fight back against these perceived injustices or the reduction of our rights is not really a muscle that we work out very much these days.
No, it's not. And, you know, I've done a lot of work with the Victims of Communism Foundation here in the United States, triggered, by the way, because of this piece I wrote. So it formed a sort of symbiotic relationship naturally. We did a panel earlier this year in California, where we had dissidents who fought back against communism from the Soviet Union, East Germany, Czechoslovakia, Cuba, and Vietnam. And your listeners can go to humanevents.com or to the Liberty Forum website of Silicon Valley, and they can watch that panel, and I'd urge them to. But here's an interesting thing that I've learned along the way. And that is, if you ask somebody who lived through that in Eastern Europe, if you say, was it as bad as people say it was? They'll all say yes, and then they'll give you horror stories. And so that's the answer people like you and I want, right? I mean, we want to hear that it's bad, and we want people to hear that. But then I ask them the second question, and the answer to this question is the one that should make everybody watching your show or listening to your show wake up and pay attention to everything around them. I always ask them, so tell me what, in the midst of all that pain and suffering, were you happy? Did you find ways to be happy? And the answer is always the same. The answer is, oh, yeah, you know, we enjoyed our family. We got together where we could, you know, played kickball in the streets or whatever it might be. We found ways to be happy. That answer should terrify people, because what that tells us really fundamentally is that as humans, we can adapt to just about any condition. And that means that as we increasingly lose individual freedom, we adjust and become accustomed to it. And that should concern us, because each time we adapt and adjust, it's sort of, you know, we're moving that line of acceptability, and we lose track of what it is that we are truly meant to have, especially here in the United States, where we had a constitution designed to protect us from ourselves, protect us from our nature, and preserve individual liberty and freedom. And we just continue to voluntarily surrender it.
It is the boiling frog syndrome, and you're exactly right. And I look at a lot of people who, well, they don't really talk to me anymore, but I imagine that they think that, you know, Michael has gone to the dark side. He's like this hardcore right-wing guy now or something. No, I'm still the person that I always was. And what I really resonate with is what I would call just traditional American values. And our vision of what that is to some people, I think, has changed a lot. I still am old school in this respect. And then some of the people that I'm talking about, their vision of what America should be or represent or what we have done in the past is now not looked upon the same way that you or I probably look upon it, because now it's going through this lens of a certain degree of self-loathing and indoctrination and reprogramming, which is part of the reason I call the show Deprogram.
Right. Well, you know, so a couple of thoughts. First of all, there's something that Charlie Kirk and I talk about that we call our arc of civilization. And the contention is this, is that on its ascendant rise, civilizations are marked by the strong dominating the weak. And at their perfected stage, we see the strong protecting the weak. But in their declining stage, we see the weak dominating the strong. And that's certainly what we have here in the United States. There's no question about that. And, you know, and I'm a simple man. So most of what I know comes from, I don't know, television or movies, because I'm not terribly literate. And there's a great scene in the third Rocky movie. I'm a big Stallone fan, where Rocky wants to fight Clubber Lang, and his old trainer, Mickey, is sitting down next to him, and he's telling him he can't fight him. And then in Rocky's arguing with him. He says, look, I've had all these title defenses. His trainer says, those are easy. They were handpicked. And then Rocky says, why don't you want me to fight him? And he says, you can't win. And then he said, look, he said, when you were young, you were hungry, you were supernatural. He said, but then the worst thing that can ever happen to a fighter happened to you. You got civilized. And there's a great element of truth in that for Western nations. We have become so civilized. We're too soft to fight the Clubber Langs. We're too soft to, in this case, quite literally, we're too soft to take on the obligations, challenges that come with individual liberty. you know, freedom isn't free, so to speak. And so we're used to handouts. We're used to relying on all sorts of government subsidies and assistances. We put up with limitations on our speech because they're, well, they're minor inconveniences. And by the way, I've got a smartphone in my hand with all this wonderful technology, and I can just play with that all day. And God help me if I really had to take responsibility for myself. So we don't have the tools anymore, and we're going to have to unlock those. And that's a very long and lengthy process. And it's going to require a lot of self-deprivation and a lot of sacrifice and risk-taking, which is what I point out in the dissident piece that I wrote.
And you are appearing with Mail K, who's been on this show before, and I'm a fan. And some other... Yeah, well, you guys are going to speak in March, and you're going to talk about this very idea.
That's right. So Mel Kay and I are on a panel for the Zelenko Freedom Foundation. They're doing a fundraising event March 11th at the Trump Doral in Miami. And in the afternoon before the gala at night, we're going to have some panel discussions, one of which is what it means and what to expect in being a dissident in today's America. And I'm thrilled to be on a panel with Mel. Mel's on the advisory committee to the Zelenko Freedom Foundation. She's brilliant and she's fun. And so she and I together, I tell her I'm going to have to polish my game a little bit between now and March so I'm able to keep up. But I'm looking forward to it. And we're going to let people know what you have to do and the price you can expect to pay.
Well, give us, because we've got a few minutes before our next break, what are some of the things that we're going to, I'm not trying to ask you to give it all away, but just point out a few things that you think that we're going to have to do. And I will also add to this, it's like, even though it seems quite dim, the spark is not completely out yet. And so I'm not a complete pessimist. I am concerned big time. And, but the spark's still there in some of us. But what do we have to do?
So let me give you a big one that's pretty simple, and yet people lose it. And that is, I'll start by saying this. I think the two most consequential dissidents in all of human history, one on the secular side and one on the religious side, are Socrates and Jesus Christ. Now, they had two things in common. First of all, they both died for their dissidency. Secondly, on a more cheerful note, they changed the entire course of history by asking questions. So what you need to do, and if people watch Charlie Kirk's videos, you know, they always go viral where he steps into a hostile crowd and he starts to just ask them questions. He didn't even say anything. And we watch the people that he's asking the questions of devolve before our very eyes. We need to be willing to stand up and ask questions of authority in public places and private places. And we need those people in authority to answer those questions in front of others so that the people who aren't as interested and engaged as we are start to hear things that don't really make sense to them, right? And so questioning the arbitrariness of the rules and what's being done and doing it publicly so that others are able to hear the answers of those who oppress us, that's a really powerful technique and tool that every single person is capable of employing starting the minute they end listening to your broadcast today, because we don't want them to start before that because we want them to listen to your show. But that's one tip.
Let me just stop you there, because that is a great tip. And the only downside to that I see is, unfortunately, all these people that are already afraid they're going to be ostracized for having wrong think or an unpopular opinion. Then the other thing is, like, what is one of people's most biggest fears is public speaking. So, and I'm not saying that to put water on it, because I think you're exactly right. And we do need more people to speak up. So, ladies and gentlemen, try to find it within yourself to speak up and speak out.
Yeah, just ask questions. You know, it's not about being a public speaker. It's about asking why and asking why not and doing it publicly. And, you know, one of the things that people have to understand is that they're not going to be able to affect a change without some consequence. When we do come back from your break, I'll share a story that I told at the Liberty Forum in Silicon Valley that really brings that point home, and I'll share with you how dramatic it was.
excellent. I am speaking with Brent Hamacek. This is his first time on the show. I'm really enjoying this conversation. And he, like me, is a dad of daughters. So,
Three of them. So
I've only got two, but we're on the same wavelength here. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. It's TNT's Deprogram. We'll be right back.
Former Vice President Mike Pence has now revealed himself as nothing more than a tool of public health authoritarianism.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
File this one in to make sure that Mike Pence is never elected dog catcher or to any other elected office again. Mike Pence's new book reveals a man who has no problems with COVID lockdowns, vaccine mandates, mask mandates, Anthony Fauci, or any other COVID restrictions. Pence praises Fauci in his book, saying, quote, "I was glad Fauci was there. He was a reassuring voice to the public." Pence also brags he was responsible for helping distribute billions of masks around the country. And Pence also comically claims they've saved millions of lives with their safe and effective vaccine. The only revelations in this book are that Mike Pence should never hold elected office again. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Several Soros-backed DAs are facing recall petitions, including George Gascon, DA of crime-riddled Los Angeles, and Pariza Degani Tafti from Arlington County and City Falls of Church, Virginia. Steve DeSano of Fairfax County, Virginia, elected in 2019, endorsed a progressive platform typical of the left-wing DA faction, making official policy not to prosecute more than 20 different crimes, including shoplifting for goods under $1,000, prostitution, and indecent exposure. Loudoun County District Attorney Bhuta Bibaraj, who championed anti-incarceration, made headlines for personally seeking jail time for Scott Smith, a father who was arrested for misdemeanor disorderly conduct at Loudoun County School Board meeting while protesting the school board's cover-up of his 14-year-old daughter's rape in a school bathroom. Bibaraj is now facing a recall petition.
The EU has approved France's ban on select short-haul domestic flights.
This does not apply to private jets.
The Net Zero Con in action. There is no climate emergency. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Brent Hamacek is my guest this hour. You can find him online at humanevents.com, also brenthamacek.com. He has a new book about one of our heroes here at TNT, Dr. Zelenko. And Brent, right before the break, you were about to tell me a story of speaking truth and some repercussions, I think.
Yeah, this is pretty fascinating to me. So I want to paint a picture of what it means to be a dissident and what you have to expect. So last year, on the 4th of July, I was a speaker at an event in Sturgis, South Dakota, middle of nowhere, sort of big campground. And it was just a 4th of July event that was all about patriotism and waving the flag and all those other dangerous crimes against humanity.
Yep.
And from the minute that event started to get promoted a few months earlier on social media, started to get suppressed instantly. It was pretty interesting, too, because there was nothing in the flyer that was offensive. It was fireworks. But the word patriotism was in it. People would post it on Facebook and it would be taken down. And they'd go in Facebook jail. My media manager at Human Events tried to post it as an experiment. And she's a big league lady. And she said, "Brent, I've never seen anything like this." So the event was being sabotaged. And so by the time it happened, there were fewer attendees there than there should have been. And then we found out it was also being sabotaged actively at the campground, to the point where there was a moment in time where the event organizer, my friend Felissa, was coming out of her trailer at the front of the campground or modular home, whatever it is, and on her way to an event that we were having in the back of the park. And she saw a car being turned away at the gate. And as the car was turning away, the driver's window was down and there was a woman driving and she was in tears. And so Felissa takes off across the gravel driveway in what were bare feet, chasing the car, screaming at it. Gets the driver to stop, and the driver says, "What's wrong?" And the driver says, "We were just turned away at the gate. We drove all the way here from Iowa. We were told the event's full and we can't come in." So he hands her a pocket full of badges and hobbles over to the gate security guard and, you know, kind of says, what the hell is going on here? The people go into the event. And later that night, when we were all sitting around the campfire, so to speak, and the bottoms of her feet were torn to pieces from what she did, you know, somebody said, why'd you do that? You know, she's telling the story. And she looks at us and she says, very simply, what else was I supposed to do? They were patriots. Somebody had to do something. Now, I told that story in a speech I gave on this dissident topic at the Liberty Forum in Silicon Valley in July of 2021. And after I was done with my speech, an older gentleman came up to me, first in line to greet me. And he said, his name was Peter Palacek. And he said, Brent, I was in Prague in 68 when the Soviet tanks rolled in. I was an active dissident in Czechoslovakia. He said, that speech you gave is one that everybody in the world needs to hear. And he said, the story you told at the end brought tears to my eyes because he said it brought it all back. And people have to understand that they have to be willing to pay the price. Fun footnote to that is that after I was done greeting people for about 45 minutes, there were these two ladies standing next to me who had been waiting the entire time. And I turned to them and asked why they'd been waiting. And they said, we wanted to tell you we loved your speech. And it was so inspiring that what we're going to do now is we're going to go out to the parking lot. We're going to take off our shoes and we're going to run barefoot in the lot to our cars because we're going to start now. So the moral of the story is simple. If you think that we're going to be able to reverse all this, these 100+ years of what I call bad parenting with a prodigal child that is collectivism, if you think we're going to be able to reverse this process painlessly, you're mistaken. So people need to be willing to take off their shoes. They need to be willing to run barefoot on the rocks, inflict some pain, and do what they can do to stand up and fight back. And this is a very long game. This isn't going to happen in a couple of weeks, and it's not going to happen in any election cycle. That's just nonsense.
My guest in the first hour, before you, a very dear friend from 20+ years. We used to both work in the music business together, and then we kind of lost touch with each other, and we found each other again as a result of basically our politics. And, you know, he and I have had some discussions over the last year or two that I, honestly, in my heart, I still didn't want to accept some of this. And I've often been on the other end of that, telling people in the past things. But one of the things he would say is like, Michael, you're not going to vote your way out of this. And I was like, wow, actually, that's true. It's going to take a lot more than that. Dropping a ballot into a box. And I'm not saying to people, go out there and do something crazy or rise up against your oppressor in some kind of fashion like that. But it's going to take more than showing up at a ballot box once a year or once every 2 or 3 years.
That's right. 2 points on that. And they're in my essay. One of them is that you have to think about it this way, that it's not just about numbers. So we like to say that we're the silent majority. Well, how's that working out for us? Maybe we shouldn't be so silent. But let's say that we are a majority. Let's say that people that see the world as it should be, the normative world, the way you and I see it. Let's say there's more of us. Okay, that's great. Let's take a look, though, at what positions the other side holds. They own the federal bureaucracy. They own every large city government. They own the mainstream media. They own the entertainment industry. They own K through college education. They own large corporate boardrooms. We might have numbers, but they have positions. And we are outflanked, and they are on higher ground than we are. They can pick us off wherever they choose. So, oh, there's more of us. Great. That just simply means there's more of us for them to target because we've given up all the key strategic pieces of real estate. The other thing is this. Let's pretend there had been a wet red wave. Let's go to, you know, some form of conservative utopia for people who love elections. Here's a question. Right. If there had been a red wave and the Republicans had won a bunch of seats in the House and Senate, way more than they did, do you think the other folks would have said, oh, gosh, look at that. We lost. Son of a gun. I guess 100+ years of work is down the drain. Let's go to Pismo Beach. It's not happening. So they're not going to give up. They're not going to be deterred. Collectivism as an idea has been around a long time, and it's not going to go away anytime soon. They've made tremendous progress, and we're not going to be able to defeat that by winning an election or two. They're not going to give up. Said differently, this is actually a battle we can't win. We can take ground and hold ground, but there will never be a final victory. Because as long as man has been around man, man's been trying to control man. That's in our nature. That won't end. So since it won't end, that means we need to fight back, regain ground, hold it as best we can, and then be sentinels on the watch to stop it from happening again.
That is deep, and I think it's right on. And while you were saying all of that, I was thinking, the left, the Democrats, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And when they got to circle the wagons, they circle the wagons. They are lockstep in whatever it is they decide to do. And unfortunately, for those of us who are not on the left, and I'm a mixture of different things, but I consider myself more aligned with the right and libertarianism these days. Unfortunately, we've got guys like Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy. These people, call them rhinos, call them whatever you want, but they are not going to stand for the things that you and I and the groups that we're talking to stand for.
No, they're not. And, that's the big problem. The problem we have is that it's not just about some other party. It's about the human beings who run for office, who we elect. And again, that's only part of the problem. You don't just have to win one or two elections. You got to win a ton of them in a row to impact change at that level. And you have all the things to deal with I mentioned and all those other strategic silos, right? And then here's the big problem with elections. And, I'm always sort of called the Prince of Darkness a little bit because, look, I just tell people the way I see it truthfully because I don't think sugarcoating anything does any good in business or politics or anything else.
That's
we
right.
have a country here in the United States where virtually every household in some shape, manner, or form gets some form of government assistance, a subsidy, whatever it is, right? So in order to reverse this monolithic collectivist model we have of centralized planning, we're going to have to go to the polls, not once, not twice, but for election after election after election for decades and do what? We're going to have to vote against our own immediate self-interest. You tell me how difficult that is. It's hard enough to get a very strong, principled, committed, informed human being to do it. How about doing it with half the population of 330 million? That's what we're up against. And to the extent we rely on elections to change things, that's really what we're up against. So if somebody wants to play those odds, God love them. But I think we need to work for change in other ways, especially by working with young people, educating them, informing them, challenging them, getting them to think critically and skeptically, and hopefully to make better choices over their lifetime. This long game won't be won. I can see you and you can see me on this as we look at each other on the screen. I can tell neither one of us in our lifetime, just by the color of our hair, are going to see this victory. The victory we can't get, but we're not going to see this reverse in our lifetime, but maybe in our children or our children's children.
Brent, I'm glad you don't sugarcoat it because one of the good things about this job is that I encounter people like yourself and like Peter occasionally. And we need to hear the unvarnished truth because the pretty lie is what's gotten us here, and we need to cut straight to the truth now.
Yes, we do, and it doesn't do any good anymore to make people get optimistic. And the best thing you can do is stop watching cable news channels with the same paid prognosticators who give you all the different tips on the next election and what's going to happen and what it's going to mean. Turn them off.
Yeah.
They're all walking sound bites. They all say the same thing, and they're all missing the big picture. And whether they're doing it because they get paid to do it or they just don't get it, not my place to know. But those folks are missing the point. This is a real battle.
Brent Hamacek, thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed speaking with you. We're going to have you back. Ladies and gentlemen, go to humanevents.com. You can find his work there. Go to brenthamacek.com. Pick up the book on Zelenko. Brent, keep doing the good work, brother.
Thank you. It was a real privilege to be here. I really enjoyed it. It was a great show. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being here. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm honored and humbled to get to do this. My name is Michael Parker. This is Deprogrammed. Thank you to my producers for the work they do. Thank you to TNT for providing the platform and having the truth come out to people. Thank you for listening. This is who we're doing it for. I'll see you tomorrow.